Welcome to Brighton Broadcast News for Monday, July 10th, 2023. Mike Adams here. Thank you for joining me. Audio intro and discussion here, followed by a video interview with Dr. Kirk Moore. That's coming up. And by the way, if you haven't yet seen the interview last week with Dane Wigington, and also I did an interview with Mickey Willis, both of those interviews are just getting rave reviews from people. Just like mind-blowing interviews. It's amazing. And by the way, connecting with Mickey Willis again this week. Going to have a nice surprise for you on that. Can't wait to bring that to you. And also I've done, well, last week I did three interviews for the new show called Decentralize.tv. And we now have the Telegram group up and running on that. We don't yet have the discussion mode activated, but we will shortly. So if you go to Telegram, just search for Decentralize TV. Or you can go to, in your browser, t.me/decentralizedTV, and it'll go to that channel. And we'll be posting a lot more there. My co-host, Todd Pittner, will be in there. I'll be in there. That's the official channel for the discussion of the show, and we're going to be talking about a lot. And we're also going to give you some heads up about upcoming episodes, I think the day before they run. And don't forget to join the email list at the website, decentralized.tv. So, got a lot of good stuff coming up for you. Now, we're going to get into the new global, what's it called? Global Unified Ledger. This is sort of the Great Reset. The Bank of International Settlements has put out a document that is mind-boggling. They want to enslave the world under financial tyranny. And they've laid out the plan. The whole plan, it's been published online. I'll give you the website. That's coming up later today. Before we get to that, TMZ put out a 12-second video of actor Jamie Foxx, who was sitting on a boat and waving with one hand. He was sitting there, just waved with one hand, didn't say anything, wasn't walking, wasn't talking, nothing. And because of this 12-second video, which is not even really very good in terms of detail and resolution, and it was filmed by another boat just going by that boat, it seems like half of Twitter has exploded with a declaration that Jamie Foxx never had a stroke and that that was all a conspiracy theory. Jamie Foxx is fine. See, he's chilling and partying on a boat. Well, actually not. Remember that often with a stroke, you are paralyzed with half your body. Of course, the severity of that can vary based on, you know, severity of the stroke. And the allegations were that Jamie Foxx had lost control over one half of his body. So when we see him sitting on a boat, not walking, not talking, and waving with one hand, that is actually consistent with someone who has suffered a severe stroke that can no longer, let's say, express full motor coordination over half their body. And first of all, let me just say, I absolutely pray for Jamie Foxx and a speedy recovery. And I know he's been at the best stroke recovery center, by the way. So he's probably rebuilding the neuromotor pathways to be able to control, you know, his whatever was affected, arm, leg, half his face could be affected, facial muscles, even things like swallowing. These have to be relearned. And many stroke victims are able to relearn and regain a tremendous amount of motor control. And it's a very difficult thing. So my heart goes out to everyone who's ever suffered a stroke and suffered some kind of stroke damage, by the way. But for those on Twitter to say, yeah, see, Jamie Foxx is fine. It wasn't a vaccine. It wasn't a stroke. Everything's fine. They're kidding themselves. They're living in a fairy tale land. Until we see Jamie Foxx walking and talking and, you know, clapping his hands or something, using both hands and speaking and walking and being the full Jamie Foxx, until we see that, you can't say that he's fully recovered or that he never had a stroke or anything like that. So it's just amazing to me how so many people they want to project into Jamie Foxx their belief that vaccines have never damaged anyone. It's very sad. It's also very sad that there's been such a cover-up about Jamie Foxx. I mean, I'm not going to dwell on this issue, but it appears to me that his family and his agents have gone to tremendous lengths to try to present a counterfeit image to the world to claim that he's fine. There's nothing wrong with him. He didn't suffer any problems whatsoever. He's healthy. And yet we have other inside contacts and close sources, including Mike Tyson, by the way, who have come out and talked about the severe stroke that Jamie Foxx suffered. And I don't know why. I mean, I guess it's Hollywood, so of course everything's fake. But why can't there be some authenticity? What's wrong with Jamie Foxx coming out and saying that he had a severe stroke, and he's asking his fans for their patience, their love, their prayers, and he's going to work and recover, and he's, you know, he's not giving up, and he's going to come back into show business, and he suffered a stroke. What's wrong with saying that? Why the cover up? Why the pretend? Why do you have to pretend like everything's fine when it's not? I mean, the public would understand. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see a little bit longer. I'm not going to spend too much more time on that. But anyway, I wish Jamie Foxx a speedy recovery. Okay, next topic. Remember the chlorine dioxide source that I recommended? I think it was July 3rd, about a week ago, roughly. And it's called the Safrax Store, or Safrax, Safrax.com, or Safrax. I don't know how to pronounce it. So something really cool happened. So first of all, if you go back to, I think it's the July 3rd episode, I spent about the first 20 minutes talking about chlorine dioxide and all the amazing uses on a ranch and for pandemic preparedness and sanitizing things, and how I found this company called Safrax that actually sells these bags of 500 sort of instant chlorine dioxide tablets. They contain two compounds pressed together into essentially a 1 gram tablet, and you pop this tablet into water, and it generates chlorine dioxide in the water through a controlled effervescent type of reaction. It's a really cool thing, and I've been using those ever since. And I ordered a case of those, and I was really thrilled because I think this is an amazing prepper item. So anyway, I gave out the website, and apparently so many of you listening to this went to Safrax.com and bought this product that the Safrax company had to put up the following notice, which is really very, you know, polite. It's kind of funny, but I didn't mean to create such issues, but here it is. If you go to the store right now, it says the following: Dear valued customer, thank you for choosing our products and placing an order on our website. We would also like to express our gratitude to Mike Adams and his Health Ranger Report for featuring our chlorine dioxide in his podcast. And then they give a link. So they say, his endorsement has played a significant role in spreading awareness about our product. Well, that's cool. And then here comes the bad news. We would like to inform you that we are currently experiencing an unprecedented surge in orders, leading to a significant increase in our order processing time. As a result, there might be a delay in fulfilling your order, and it could take 2 to 4 weeks to. And then they say, we apologize for the inconvenience and understand, they're being very polite. And again, I didn't mean to inflict such an issue upon this company, but I imagine when they came back on July 5th and they, you know, opened up their office, walked in and checked their orders, they're like, whoa, what happened? So apparently, many of you listening to this, I guess probably hundreds, if not maybe 1,000, I don't know, ordered this product. Well, let me just tell you, have patience, because even if it takes them 2 to 4 weeks to get it to you, you're going to love it, because I have several bags of this, and I've been playing with it. I've been doing all kinds of great stuff with it. I throw a tablet in the dishwasher. I do it to sanitize the dishes. It's great. I've been using it around the ranch. I've been using like portions of the tablet in my goat water trough, which is great. It's keeping down the algae, and it's also, sanitizing the water there and everything. And it's safe for goats and chickens. So just hang on to your order there, and I'm sure you'll get your product soon. And by the way, if anybody was wondering, no, I am not compensated in any way for the sales of this, and I am not paid by this company. They didn't even know who I was. I'm sure they were shocked at what just happened. Pleasantly surprised. And, once they get caught up, I'll probably mention them again. I've done this for a number of wonderful companies like Sogo Snacks, S-O-G-O, SogoSnacks.com. Wonderful American company that sells the meat sticks that are nitrite free and are super, super delicious. Another great prepper item. I've done this for many companies like Dawson Knives and so on. So it's just something I do when I find companies that usually they're small businesses in America and they have some really great innovative product for prepping or other purposes. You know, I'll give them a plug and they'll get blown away with orders. And it's just my way of paying it forward to help connect you with them, and everybody wins, you know? So that's the only reason I'm doing it. And I have not had any contact actually with that company except placing my own order. But I hope to have contact with them. I'd like to get somebody from that company on actually to do an interview about chlorine dioxide, you know, in industrial uses and agriculture and ranch uses and home uses or whatever. I think that'd be a great interview. So if anybody's listening from Safrax, watch for an email from my producer to try to reach out to you and get you on whoever you are, get you on the show. I think that'd be really great. Okay, something else I got to mention to change the subject here. We are attempting to publish two episodes of Decentralized TV each week. And we had intended to publish today, Monday, we'd intended to publish an interview with local Monero, actually with a man named Alex, who is apparently the co-founder of localmonero.co. That interview is coming. It's just a little bit delayed because we are trying to, there were some things missing from the show after my editors got done with it. And I just wanted some more things in. I wanted more URLs on the screen, and I needed to add like a little lower third and things like that. So that's not going to be published today. It might be tomorrow or probably Wednesday at the latest. But even if this episode is delayed a little bit, don't worry. We are going to be publishing two episodes per week, starting real soon here, real soon. Oh, and I forgot to tell you, I got to tell you this. So remember my saga with the Kraken exchange? You know, Kraken is a centralized exchange where you can, you know, you could buy crypto using, you know, dollars. And you got to go through the KYC process, you know, which means know your customer. And, you know, they got to know everything about you, your social security number. And here, take a picture of your passport and take a picture of your face and take a picture frowning like Greta Thunberg and take a picture. No, they didn't ask for all that, but pretty much they need a lot of pictures and everything just to know your identity and to know it's not fraud. And you may recall that after I signed up last week and then they mysteriously banned my account, even though I had not even bought anything. I'd made no trades whatsoever. And they banned my account, and they told me that I could never use Kraken again. I'm like, I haven't even used it once. What are you talking about? and then I complained about that publicly. I went on Twitter and Telegram, and I said, you know, WTF, man, what's Kraken? Why is Kraken banning me? What are they cracking down on? Well, a Kraken person, I don't know what their official title is, reached out to me and said that they looked into the, like, why I was banned on Kraken, because they were shocked to hear this. And they found out that it was a total mistake, and they reinstated my account. And at first, I didn't believe they were going to do that. So I'm like, okay, yeah, sure. Go ahead, do whatever you're going to do, and I'll try, and we'll see. But sure enough, they were right. And then over the weekend, I was able to log in, and I was able to use Kraken, and I was able to buy some Monero, it's a privacy coin, XMR. And that's the coin that most exchanges won't sell you, by the way. So Kraken is one of the few. And so I bought some Monero, and then I was able to send it off the platform to my private wallet. And all that worked great. I also bought some Bitcoin, a little bit of Litecoin. I like to use Litecoin for fast swaps, things like that. The bottom line, Kraken actually kept their word. They made it work. I'm back on with Kraken. And again, they said it was a mistake. And actually, what they said is that they thought that someone was impersonating me, essentially. I mean, I'm kind of simplifying it, but that's what they thought, like that somebody had stolen my ID and had gotten access to my bank accounts and was trying to commit a bunch of fraud in my name. Like, they couldn't believe that it was me signing it for some reason. Like, why wouldn't I? I mean, I need access to crypto too, right? In fact, I'm trying to acquire a lot of crypto at this point. So anyway, I'm still frozen on Gemini, by the way, and now on Robinhood. So I've tried so many exchanges, and I've been banned on most of them for some mysterious reason, or I've had my accounts frozen, or in some cases stolen. Even Coinbase froze my accounts a couple years ago, and today it's Robinhood and Gemini. So Gemini is now going on like 12, 13, 14 days, something like that. No response. Like, their customer service is non-existent. It's so funny. Seriously, I can't wait to tell you how that one gets resolved. Like, what's their story going to be? It'll be like, oh, we were alerted that you were using our platform too much, right? It's pretty much like, don't you exist to let people buy crypto? Yeah. Well, so when people buy crypto, then you say that's fraud? Yeah, it could be fraud. So why do you exist as a platform then? Why don't you just close down and go sell, you know, lemonade or something? It's like, Gemini is a platform where if you use it in the way it's intended, your account will be shut down. The only people they allow to stay on Gemini apparently are people who don't use it, because that does not raise suspicion. So good luck, Gemini. Winklevoss twins, I think, are the owner. Good luck. You're not going to go very far in crypto with that kind of attitude, let me tell you. It would be like a car dealer. It has a parking lot full of cars, and you come in and you want to buy a car, and they say, okay, here's the price and everything. Sign up. You sign up. Okay. And you buy the car. You transfer the money. You get in the car, and then they call the police. They say, oh, you might be a thief. What? I just bought the car. Well, but the fact that you used our car dealership means that you might be someone who can't be trusted. So, you know, wait here while the police search the car. What do you mean? I'm just driving it off your lot. You know, if car dealers acted like Gemini, every car brand would be bankrupt. It's just amazing. All right. Anyway, there was some major breaking news over the weekend about global money and finance. And essentially, Russia has announced that they're going to support and develop a new system, which will be a gold-backed BRICS currency, essentially. Or it's also called, in essence, a golden ruble, but it's more than the ruble. It's the BRICS nations. You know, it's Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, and more, a bunch of other countries. So this article, or this news, was covered by many organizations, including RT, but not so much Western media, because Western media is still trying to pretend that the dollar is king, the dollar is forever, and no one's going to topple the dollar. But RT told the truth about this. Here it is. Russia needs a golden ruble. A cryptocurrency backed by gold would be immune to sanctions, according to analysts at VEB.RF. Okay, so VEB.RF is a development corporation that works with the Russian government. And their report, according to RT, says that the fact that financial sanctions were levied against Russia has brought to the surface a realization that a, quote, transition to a completely different national financial and monetary system is in order, and they recommended that Russia launch a gold-backed stable coin under the working title, quote, Golden Ruble. Wow. And that Western countries would have no opportunity to block operations carried out in such a currency, since its exchange rate would be pegged to the gold rate on the world market, not to the dollar. Oh, that's going to hurt. Or for not pegged to the euro either. Ouch! It's going to not even pegged to the ruble. It's going to be pegged to gold. Gold price. A gold-backed stablecoin, crypto stablecoin. So, and this is wild. I mean, in a positive way. This is amazing. Because do you recall a couple years ago when I was very frustrated about crypto, and I said, you know, the best form of crypto would be a gold-backed crypto. Like, it would have all the advantages of crypto, like rapid, borderless transactions, you know. You can send it over the internet. All these amazing advantages. And, you know, you can take it with you. It's very portable, whatever. But backed by gold And gold is, of course, you know, the ultimate store of value that will outlast the rise and fall of civilizations, and gold has been around, you know, since the beginning of time, whatever. So to combine these two and have a cryptocurrency backed by gold would be really something special. And apparently Russia has also realized that that's the answer. And do you realize that if Russia launched this, that people all over the world would buy it? Because it would be probably the least risky asset in the, you know, digital crypto space, or at least among the least risky. It wouldn't have the price volatility of Bitcoin or privacy coins like Monero. It wouldn't crash and burn like ICOs that crater. It would have the value of gold, that is, at least as long as they're honestly backing it by physical gold. So there would have to be audits, you know, do you have the gold that you say you have, and so on and so forth. And the advantage of this for everybody in the world would be that people could do business with Russia. They could make payments with Russia that have nothing to do with, you know, the war or weapons or anything like that. But they could make payments to Russia or receive payments from Russia in order to do things like, let's say, pay programmers. In fact, that was part of my interview with Local Monero. He was talking about, was it Local Monero? No, I'm sorry. It was a different interview that's coming up. But in this interview with, I'm not going to say who yet, but it's coming up, this project leader said they have a programmer in Russia, and when the sanctions kicked in from the U.S. and the SWIFT system got taken down, they couldn't pay their Russian programmer. Well, what's the answer? Cryptocurrency. So does Bitcoin work in Russia? Yes, it does, it turns out. Does Bitcoin honor the SWIFT sanctions? No. And what about Monero? No, Monero doesn't. Monero flips its fingers at economic sanctions and all that bullcrap. Monero is just, it works everywhere on the planet. And so there may be lots of cases where somebody is trying to pay a Russian person. Let's say maybe a U.S. company licensed some, I don't know, like a patent from a Russian inventor or something, and they owe the Russian inventor royalties, you know? It's just like an honest thing that's been going on for 10 years, and maybe it's a patent for like a food blender or something. Nothing to do with war or weapons or anything. It's like a blender, let's say. This is just an example. And you're supposed to pay the inventor these royalties, and then one day, what, you can't pay them anymore because of the economic sanctions? Because the dollar transfer system is all broken? So crypto solves that problem. And that's why Russia is looking at launching the golden ruble. Now, this could be the basis then for a BRICS system, or it could interact with a BRICS system, which might also be a decentralized ledger of some kind that would allow everybody around the world to interact in terms of borderless instant payments that are not subject to the punitive actions of the West. Because the U.S. likes to fling sanctions around the world at the drop of a hat. Oh, we're going to sanction you. We're going to sanction Libya. We're going to sanction Iraq. We're going to sanction, you know, every country, especially Russia. If you don't do what we want, we'll sanction you. Well, crypto says, screw your sanctions. Because if you're going to have a system of money that works, it shouldn't be subject to the political whims of lunatics in the U.S. State Department, basically. So this is huge. This is huge. And it means, by the way, that there are more people around the world, more countries and more businesses that are going to move away from the dollar, just as we've been warning about. Now, there's a variation of this story covered in the Western media, in this case, Kitco.com. Kitco, K-I-T-C-O. Here's the headline. Russia confirms that BRICS will create a gold-backed currency. So Friday, the Russian government has confirmed that all the BRICS nations will introduce a new trading currency backed by gold, and that this announcement is going to be made during the BRICS summit in August, coming right up, in South Africa. Okay? Huge news, right? Huge news. And then, let's see, Willem Middlecoop tweeted this out. It's official. BRICS planning to introduce a new trading currency backed by gold. Gold standard will be great benefit to strengthening a single currency. 41 countries have applied for BRICS membership. 41 countries. And then Kitco reports the following. The latest news is adding new momentum to the ongoing de-dollarization trend unfolding in the global economy. See? Since mid-2022, central banks have been buying gold at an historic pace, in part to diversify their reserve away from the U.S. dollar. And again, this is not a conspiracy site writing this. It's Kitco.com, which is a very trusted source for financial news. For many analysts, they write, a gold-backed currency is the next evolution in this process. Many analysts have seen China's recent gold purchases as an attempt to bring international credibility to the yuan. All right, it goes on and on. So let's just go back to what I've been saying recently. You know, quiz time, if you've been listening to my podcast, what am I converting all my liquid assets into? What is it? Three things: gold, silver, and crypto. And here we go. The new currency of the world is going to be gold and crypto. You see? Trust me. Pay attention to this podcast. You're going to be years ahead. I mean, it's almost like cheating with a crystal ball. This is what's going to happen tomorrow. I mean, not physically the next day on the calendar, but I mean next year and the years to come. This is tomorrow that's being described today. The dollar, it's going to go down in history as a failed currency. Not in a week, not in a month, not even in 1 year, but the dollar is going to zero. The dollar is going to fail. And so the dollar is kind of like the sinking Titanic. It's going to take a while for the water to fill the, what do they call those, all the different chambers in the bottom of the boat that's supposed to have these dividers that were supposed to isolate the flooding, but they weren't built tall enough, so the water kept spilling over that into the next chamber. And this whole process takes time. So the boat of the dollar is taking on water. It's going to sink. It's going to the bottom of the Atlantic, and where other tourists have since died trying to look at it, but, you know, in the submarine, which I'm not going to go into today, thank goodness. But the Titanic of the dollar is going to the bottom of the Atlantic. And yet, at the moment, there are still life rafts available. there are. At the moment, people aren't yet panicked. People are still, you know, dining and drinking and listening to the live music, and they're in a state of denial. Yeah, maybe they felt the ship hit the iceberg or whatever actually happened. Maybe they felt the shutter, and, you know, they heard the creaking of metal, and then it all calmed down. And then they looked at each other and they said, everything's fine. This ship is unsinkable. It's the Titanic, and it was billed as unsinkable. Remember? It was supposed to be the unsinkable ship. The steel hull was incredibly thick. I don't even know how thick, but I remember seeing a documentary on it. It was supposed to be crazy thick, which makes you wonder, how did the iceberg cut through it, right? But whatever. We're not going to go into the Titanic conspiracy theories or anything at this particular moment. But people are sitting on the ship right now, the dollar ship, and they're partying down. They think everything's fine. The smart people are headed for the life rafts. And what are the life rafts? Gold and silver and certain types of crypto. Not like crap coin crypto, but certain types of crypto. And then and those crypto life rafts are very difficult to discern, like which ones are going to float and which ones are going to sink. So that's why you got to, you know, tune into my show, frankly, decentralize.tv, because we're interviewing the top, the best leaders and pioneers in the crypto space. Over the next 2 months, you're going to learn a wealth of information to be able to choose the life raft that is the most appropriate for you and the most risk-free. Although nothing is 100% risk-free. Even good life rafts can still suffer failures. And neither is gold risk-free nor silver. But if you're headed to the life rafts right now ahead of other people, well, you have a much better chance of getting out of all this with your assets intact, whereas people who keep their dollars in the bank, man, they're just going down. They're just going down with the Titanic. They're not going to know what hit them. And when panic day comes, there will be no life rafts available because the banks will be closed. They will close the exits, just like they shut the doors to the lower levels of the Titanic. What do they call it? The steerage, they called it. And they locked the doors so that the people couldn't, you know, the low wage people down there couldn't get to the life rafts. Remember that from the movie Titanic? Yeah. Was that true or was that fiction? I don't know. Dramatization. But something like that is happening in banking and finance, where the common folk, we'll say, are never told the truth about the dollar and how it's headed for total collapse. Because if people knew the truth, they would all pull their money out of the banks right now, and then the banks would collapse because they don't have your money. So the truth, the simple truth of the matter is, only a tiny percentage of people who hold dollars can ever preserve those assets, just mathematically. And that number might be 1%, maybe, I don't know, 2%. I mean, optimistically, you could say, you could argue maybe 4 or 5%, but certainly no more than that. The vast majority of people are going to lose the vast majority of their assets. And now that we have Russia confirming there's going to be a BRICS-based gold-backed cryptocurrency with 41 nations plus trying to get into that. And as you know, I have intel, it's over 100 nations that want to join BRICS. And by the way, you know why they're announcing this whole gold-backed cryptocurrency thing right now? Because they already built it. This thing's already done. They're announcing it because they're about to roll it out. Of course, there's a bit of theater in this. They're announcing it as if they're only in the idea stage. No, no, no. Do you realize that some of the best crypto programmers in the world are Russian? Maybe the best. I mean, the Russians know crypto, I would say, arguably better than any other ethnicity on the planet. I mean, they're brilliant programmers when it comes to this stuff. And they've already got this thing done. So they're just getting ready to roll it out. And when they roll this out, and you think about sending money internationally would cost pennies, and it would only take minutes instead of days, and it wouldn't be subject to U.S. sanctions. And you start thinking about Russia saying to all of its trading partners like Turkey and India and China and whoever, hey, you want to buy our commodities? You want to buy our oil, our fertilizer? You want to buy our minerals, aluminum, natural gas? Well, guess what? All you got to do is you just got to buy this gold-backed crypto and pay us in that. And then what happens to the demand for the gold-backed crypto? It explodes. It skyrockets. And it becomes probably one of the most successful blockchain projects in the world virtually overnight. Maybe even going neck and neck with Bitcoin. And then a lot of people in Bitcoin are going to say, huh, Bitcoin isn't technically backed by anything. You know, you can't trade Bitcoin for a commodity. But then Russia has this thing where you can trade their coin for gold. I would imagine a lot of people might diversify out of Bitcoin into this thing because it's backed by gold, a gold stablecoin. So anyway, this is about to happen. And frankly, it's going to change the world. It's going to be huge. And it's right around the corner. This might be one of the reasons why the West is so desperate to ban crypto or to regulate it out of existence, because they know that Russia is leading the world on this. And China's got a lot of capable engineers as well. Now, in the meantime, we're going to go to a UK Daily Mail article that tells you the panic that's happening with the U.S. Treasury and the Federal Reserve. Here's the headline. Bizarre moment. The Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen bows multiple times to China's vice premier and excitedly shakes his hand. Okay, so Janet Yellen goes to China. And then in this video that you can find all over Twitter, probably every video site, Janet Yellen rushes onto the carpet of this room to shake the hand of China's vice premier, and then she bows like a lap dog, like a trained dog, just like almost. She just keeps bowing again and again. Hi! I know that's more of a Japanese sound right there, but Janet Yellen is doing this in China. And then somebody has to rush out from behind her to stop her from bowing over and over again. It's the funniest thing. And it's like, Janet Yellen, what the heck? I mean, she acts all confident and sure of herself and powerful when she's testifying before the U.S. Senate. And then she goes over to China and says, just almost like a whimpering puppy or something. It's embarrassing. It's like, are you kidding me? I mean, she bowed 3+ times, and it's just where does she think she was? I mean, what this does is it advertises to the world. Well, this shows that Janet Yellen, who was at the Fed and now she's the Treasury Secretary, that she is subservient to China. It's almost like, you know, oh, tell me what to do, you know, yeah, okay. Bowing. I am your puppet. It's like, man. So China, the symbolism can't be missed. I'm sure Putin is laughing. But America looks weak. China looks strong. Well, at least the Biden administration looks weak. I mean, Janet Yellen looks like a fool. And China looks strong and powerful and actually tall. The guy is much taller than Janet Yellen, who is rather short in stature. But her body language is so subservient. It's like she's just advertising that China has all the power here. And that's true. China does have all the power. Why? I mean, economically. Well, number one, China's got all the blackmail dirt on the Biden family. You know, the laptop and all the child prostitutes that Hunter Biden was banging while smoking crack and buying guns or whatever he does. China's got all that stuff. Okay. And then secondly, China holds, what is it? Something like $900 billion in U.S. treasuries. I think it's close to $1 trillion. And then on top of that, more importantly, China controls exports of a massive amount, the predominant majority of consumer goods and you know, agriculture parts, supply chains for automobiles, and also a lot for aerospace and some for military as well, including, of course, rare earth minerals and certain minerals that are critical to U.S. manufacturing, including manufacturing of green, so-called, you know, green energy products, solar panels and so on. I think gallium is one of those that they have just recently put restrictions on. Yeah, in fact, I just looked this up. Gallium and germanium. So germanium is used in fiber optics and things like night vision. Gallium is used in semiconductors and solar panels, by the way. And China produces 60% of the world's germanium and 80% of gallium. So they're now exporting those two minerals to the United States, which means that the U.S. will not be able to manufacture a lot of military products and energy products and some telecom and semiconductors and computers and so on. So this is happening now. And so this is one reason why Janet Yellen is rushing over to China. Oh, please. You know, to try to open back up these minerals. Because, of course, the Biden regime, run by morons, has shut down as much mining as they possibly can. It's like, oh, you can't mine in America. You're like, well, what about the germanium? Where are we supposed to get that, you know? Of course, the Biden regime, run by idiots, they have no idea where minerals come from. They probably don't know the difference between minerals and molecules. They probably think you can synthesize minerals out of oil or something, you know? They're just stupid. So we are about to find ourselves in essentially economic sanctions, export sanctions from China that cannot be solved by printing money. See, you know how the U.S. tries to solve everything either by bombing somebody or printing money? Those are the only two policies that the Biden regime understands, like, let's bomb them or let's print money. That's it, right? Neither one of those gets you germanium, it turns out, for some reason, or gallium, for that matter, or frankly, much of anything on the table of elements. So yeah, you can bomb a country. Guess what? You're not getting germanium coming out of there, especially if you just bombed their infrastructure. And you print money, it doesn't print germanium. You can print all the money you want. It doesn't print food, it doesn't print energy, it doesn't print gallium, it doesn't print nickel, aluminum, copper, none of this stuff. So again, the U.S. right now under the Biden regime is run by actual idiots. And there's a couple of morons on the U.S. Supreme Court, too, by the way. Of course, they're the liberal Supreme Court justices, literally low IQ court clerks that were recruited and rebranded to be Supreme Court justices. There's two of them in there right now. They both happen to be women. But there's a very capable woman on the more conservative side, you know, Barrett. But there's a couple other women that are actual idiots. So it's very characteristic of our nation that our so-called president is this senile old man shuffling along on the beach, can barely walk, and talks like a moron, and his words are unintelligible. And the Supreme Court justices put in place by the Democrats are actual idiots. And the State Department is run by morons who don't understand anything about anything. Economics, geopolitics, military weaponry, raw materials, supply chains. I mean, you name it. They don't know anything, literally. They're just stupid. It's idiocracy. They probably would try to put round pegs in square holes, and then they would complain when it doesn't seem to be working, but then they would have the White House spokesperson say that it is working and that you're racist if you think it isn't. So that's how crazy things are in the Biden regime. Now, remember me talking, I don't know, a year ago or something about, I was joking that Elon Musk was boring tunnels underneath my warehouse and that he might be popping up through the floor to steal my Ranger buckets. You know, I was just joking around. It's funny, but that's because actually the fulfillment center and manufacturing of our warehouse operations is not that far from the Tesla headquarters. And it's all in Central Texas. It's just kind of east of Austin. And there's a place called Cedar Creek. There's a place called Bastrop. And there's a place called Smithville. That's kind of west to east. And then another place called Elgin, which is north, kind of northeast of Austin. Well, Elon Musk has decided to move everything into this area. I mean, he's moving everything from Austin, Cedar Creek, and Bastrop County, which includes Smithville. And here's a story from April of this year. SpaceX is opening a new Starlink manufacturing facility in Bastrop, Texas, and has started hiring already. So this new facility is going to be used to produce Starlink hardware, and it's a 500,000 square foot manufacturing space in Bastrop. And I also just read, by the way, that there's some major company that supplies parts to Samsung that's opening up a massive facility in also in Bastrop, Texas, in what's it called? Some kind of like economic development zone, like a commercial zone that I think the city or the county has set up. So there's a lot of tech moving into Central Texas. Well, what a lot of people are just finding out about is that these tunnels, these boring company tunnels, are being built underneath all these facilities by Elon Musk in order to connect them. So his new facility in Bastrop, Texas, the 500,000 square foot warehouse, is going to be connected to the Tesla headquarters, which is like, I don't know, 20 miles to the west near Austin, with an underground tunnel. And then over the weekend, some photos emerged of this boring tunnel actually coming out of the ground near the warehouse in Bastrop. So I wanted to show you these photos in case you haven't seen them. So as you can see here, this boring tunnel comes out of the ground at an angle. It's a massive tunnel, you know, vehicles can go in it. And it's coming out right in the parking lot area of this Bastrop, Texas SpaceX facility. And you can see it in these photos. It's a giant, it looks like a giant concrete pipe. And that's the tunnel. Well, that tunnel goes all the way to Austin. And then the rumor is there's another tunnel that's going to connect to some areas in Houston as well. And I happen to know some people, I forgot how much I ever said about this, some people who heard construction workers talking about this, construction workers who have been in these tunnels and who run the boring machines, or, you know, they work, maybe they don't run the machines directly, but they work with the machine crews. And some of these people have loose lips, and they've been talking about it for a couple of years, that Elon Musk is building a network of tunnel systems under Texas. And some people believe that tunnels go all the way to California. That would be a long tunnel. You would think it would have to have multiple stops, and you would wonder about like plate tectonics shifting and causing cracks and failures in the tunnel, whatever. And by the way, the Texas soil in central Texas is also kind of shifty, and it expands and contracts. There's a lot of clay in it. So, you know, these tunnels are going to be subjected to a lot of pressures of expansion and contraction. But the point is that Elon Musk is indeed building tunnel systems, just like I said, and just like the rumors have been, and here are the photos of it. It's not even a secret anymore. I mean, they can't really keep it a secret. These giant concrete tunnels emerging out of the ground, and you know, anybody can just fly over with a drone and get some pictures of it, and that's what this guy did. Joe Tegtmeyer, I think is his name. So he's got a YouTube video that's going to come out and show all this. So in fact, let's go to a segment from the video published by Joe Tegtmeyer, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, that was put on YouTube, let's see, about a month ago. It's called Starlink and Boring Company Facilities Progress, Boring Company and SpaceX Updates. And you can get a closer look. There's two tunnels being built here. And we also know that the public cover story is that these tunnels just go across the street. But that's, okay, maybe they do go across the street, and then they also go to Austin. But why would you build an entire multi-million dollar tunnel just across the street? Doesn't make any sense. That's just the cover story. But anyway, check this out. Pretty fascinating video here from Joe.
So let's take a look now across Farm to Market 1209 and take a look at the progress on the SpaceX Starlink site. And in the last 2 months, what we have seen is they've completed these two tunnel drilling. You can see that right in the middle of the screen. Looks like they're doing some concrete formwork around the first of the two tunnels. And this is the one closest to the main entrance of the SpaceX facility. What we also see is quite a bit of the curbs have been installed around the entire facility, and it outlines where we will see asphalt for the roads. And then the heavy rains that we've just recently had kind of made a pond by the road, but all of this will be transformed into parking at some point in the future. And this gives you a good view of the two tunnels here and how they go underneath the road and emerge on the Boring Company side of the road.
Okay, there you go. A good look at the tunnels. And the reason I wanted to pause it here was to show you how lame this cover story is. The cover story is, again, that these tunnels are being built because they need to go underneath the road. Really? Why wouldn't you just drive across the road? Because it's not like that's a major road. You see, it's kind of a country road. I think that's the 1209 highway. It's a little rinky-dink road. You wouldn't spend, I don't know, how many millions of dollars to burrow under this thing with all the concrete forms and all the engineering and everything just because you need to cross the road. This is a cover story. They're saying they're building tunnels to go under the road so that people don't know the deeper truth, which is that these tunnels go to Austin and maybe other places. And in Austin, they come up, it's rumored that they come up inside the Tesla facility, which is many acres itself. It's like multiple football fields. It looks like a star base, frankly. I mean, it's massive. It's just massive. And the tunnels come up inside that building. So if you're Elon, you don't have to deal with Texas traffic on Highway 71. All you got to do is get in your tunnel inside the Tesla building, And then you emerge at the tunnel here in Bastrop to check out your Starlink operation, you see? So Elon is linking the manufacturing facilities, headquarters, and probably also living facilities. So Elon Musk is buying up like ranches and hundreds of acres near this area. And of course, the costs of the land are going insane. I know a guy who, a friend of his, had something like 20 or 30 acres in this area, and that Elon Musk came along and his company just offered him $100,000 an acre. And really, those acres might only be worth 10,000. I mean, before all this, but 100 grand an acre. And the guy has 2 years to move off the land. So Elon's companies are buying up a massive amount of land, and they're going to have housing here. They're going to have companies here, and they're going to have tunnels connecting a lot of that. No traffic, just tunnels. Interesting, huh? All right, now for the final story today. This is from the Bank of International Settlements, the BIS. The BIS has just released a new report in the last, I don't know, couple of weeks. And it calls for a unified ledger, which is a centralized system of control, a centralized database of all the assets in the world, including this would encompass CBDCs or central bank digital currencies. It would encompass your bank accounts, stocks, bonds, real estate, everything, every asset. They want to tokenize under a one-world system, a centralized exchange, not peer-to-peer, not crypto, not decentralized, but rather a centralized global system. And the head of research at the BIS, Hyun Song Shin, that's a Korean name, he is the presenter and author of this, and he's the one who's arguing for this. Now, I want to give you the website where you can find this. If you go into any browser, go into any search engine, I like to use Brave Search. That's just search.brave.com. And type in bis.org/, and then Blueprint Future Monetary System. And you'll find the report. It's a PDF report. It's quite lengthy. And the key takeaways of this report that are published by the BIS are that global tokenization of money and assets needs to take place. And it needs to combine all the central banks of the world. And they're calling for a new type of financial market infrastructure, which they call a global unified ledger. Could, quote, capture the full benefits of tokenization by combining central bank money, tokenized deposits, and tokenized assets on a programmable platform, they say. Folks, this is even bigger than CBDCs. And in fact, it's worse than CBDCs. So they're admitting this is going to be programmable. What they mean is controllable. Controllable. Whereas a blockchain in decentralized peer-to-peer currency is not programmable unless it's like Ethereum smart contracts. But I mean, a non-smart contract blockchain such as Bitcoin is not programmable. It is immutable. The information is written there forever. But on what the globalists are proposing here, the BIS, is a programmable ledger run by globalists where they can change anything in the ledger at any time. Now, what they mean by that is, and by the way, this is where they get the phrase, you will own nothing, because everything you own, real estate, stocks, bank accounts, everything, will be put onto this ledger, this global unified ledger. This ledger can then be programmed by the globalists based on your adherence to their demands, whether it's climate change or speech or LGBT or whatever. So if you do something they don't like, guess what? They can alter the program and they can, in effect, nullify your assets. They can take away the record, the globally recognized record of your ownership, by just zeroing out your name on, let's say, that piece of real estate that you think you own. Well, if they delete you from the ledger, you don't really own it anymore because, well, the banks only recognize this ledger, you see. And if they delete your ownership of your bank account assets, then you don't own them anymore because ownership is controlled by the globalists through this centralized unified ledger. So that's what they mean by you will own nothing and be happy. You will own nothing because they have total control over your ownership. You will have no custody over anything. You see, as long as they control the ledger, they have custody. They have the keys. They have the passwords. They have access to the data. Whereas with something like Bitcoin or Monero or privacy digital crypto or even gold or silver, you have it in your possession. You have ownership over it. And you have control because you have custody. But under this new global unified ledger, you will not have custody over any digitized assets or tokenized assets. You won't have custody at all. You will only be granted permission to have custody as long as you sufficiently obey their demands. And they are openly talking about this plan. It's all in the PDF. They even talk about this. They say a unified ledger could harness programmability to enable arrangements that are currently not practical. What do you think they mean by that? To punish people that they want to punish, to take money away from people who aren't doing their bidding, to automatically tax people, to automatically fine people, to seize your funds at any time, at any moment, without notice. See, that's what this is. It's called tokenization, and it's a global tokenization of all assets on their programmable platform. And again, this guy, Hyun Song Shin, is the guy who's behind all of this. And he and the BIS have announced this in a press release. CoinDesk reports that according to the BIS, that this new system would provide, quote, new methods for security settlement combining all individual steps into one transaction, like one world government, and enable tokenized deposits with built-in regulatory checks. See? So, you know, the governments, the banks, the corporations, they will all have their demands, and you have to bow down to them. And if you don't pass the regulatory checks, then they don't allow any transactions. Oh, you're a bad person. You don't score high enough on the environmental social governance score, you see. ESGs or whatever. And then specifically, Sheen here says that this would not be built on a permissionless blockchain. It's going to be built on a centralized ledger. He says, quote, it could be a centralized system as well where there is a rigorous set of controls on data confidentiality, cyber resilience, and so on. He means that the globalists are going to run this system and they're going to control you. So if you were thinking that central bank digital currencies are the worst news in the financial world of, you know, controlling your life and enslaving you, no, it's going to be way bigger than that. It's going to be real estate, you know, bank accounts, every asset, stocks, bonds, like I said, all of it. It's going to be tokenized and put on this globalist blockchain. Well, I'm sorry, not a blockchain, a centralized unified ledger. That's what it is. It's the opposite of a blockchain. It's the opposite of decentralized. It's massive global centralization. They even talk about how this has to be harmonized across jurisdictions so that all countries agree to one world government type of rules and enforcement and regulations. And those regulations will come from the same lunatics that are slaughtering 200,000 cows in Ireland right now in the name of climate change, or that are seizing and shutting down farms in the Netherlands in the name of climate change, or that are banning oil exploration, banning mineral exploration, you know, banning all the things that you need to have society function. So these people want total global enslavement of the human race, and this is how they're going to do it, or at least they're going to attempt to do it. Now, the good news is they are so stupid they will probably not be able to accomplish this. You know, these are not the smartest people in the world that run these globalist agendas. They have a lot of power. They have a lot of money. They do control the media and so on, but they're not that bright. I mean, just look at the whole European Union fiasco. And look at the Biden administration. There's a lot of morons in power. I mean, look at Janet Yellen, for God's sake. I mean, look at Macron in France. I mean, just on and on. Look at the leaders of these Western European countries. They're kind of morons. And they think they're going to roll this thing out through a centralized control system, which means that every hacker in the world will be working to hack this thing and break it. Every Russian hacker, every North Korean hacker, every hacker from communist China, all over the world is going to be trying to hack this system, and they'll probably break it. You know why? Because centralized systems are not very resilient. Centralized systems give a common focus point for hackers. See, the advantage of decentralized systems like Bitcoin is that they are a lot more resilient against being hacked or taken down because there's not one central database. The database is everywhere. It's shared across every node. It's like a hologram. So centralization is actually going to, I think, ultimately fail. They'll try it, but I think they'll fail, which means I think long-term the world's going to end up in decentralized systems of finance, i.e. crypto. I think that's ultimately where it's going. Now, between here and there, the governments of the world may try to ban privacy coins like Monero. They may try to ban Bitcoin. They may try to ban people from holding their own wallets, their own custody of crypto keys, for example. They might try all that, you know, in a desperate attempt to get people to sign up for their central bank digital currencies in this unified ledger bullcrap system. But in the end, they can't ban crypto, not effectively, because crypto is so decentralized and there's no corporation to attack. There's no servers to seize. And it's global. Even if one jurisdiction like the United States tried to take down Bitcoin, well, guess what? Bitcoin's going to run fine everywhere else. And even if Western Europe tries to take it down, Bitcoin's run fine in Dubai or the United Arab Emirates, right? Or lots of Southeast Asian nations and so on. It's working fine in Singapore, you know? So they can't take it down. All they can do is try to scare people into using their globalist system. And frankly, a lot of people are beyond being scared at this point. They're done with it. They no longer have faith in the failed governments, especially after COVID and the vaccine fiasco and the lockdowns and the masks and the lies and propaganda and the bioweapons. A lot of people have lost faith in the institutions that are going to be the same institutions that demand our compliance with their Mark of the Beast CBDC systems. And frankly, probably half the people in the world, not just the US, half the people in the world or more are just going to say, nope, not using it. And then some significant percentage of the other half of people are going to try to hack it. I mean, think about during COVID when they gave away that under Trump, gave away like $1 trillion in financial assistance to businesses and so on. It was more than a trillion. You realize that that was a massive fraud operation on the part of people all over the world applying for that free money and getting it. It's a massive $1 trillion fraud of just soaking the U.S. government with all this handout money. And, you know, mafia organizations from all over the world came in and claimed that money. A lot of that story is actually coming out now. That's what's happening. So when governments try to roll out this CBDC system or unified ledger, they're not going to be able to keep it secure. They just don't have the technical expertise because they are corrupt. They are inefficient. They are stupid. Some of the best and brightest minds in the world are working on decentralized crypto or Web 3.0 or, you know, anti-surveillance tech solutions. You can talk about Monero Seraphis or Firo's Lolanta Spark or lots of other pieces of technology that are way more advanced and can't be hacked, can't be broken. Cryptography is going to protect the privacy and freedom of world citizens who don't want to be enslaved under the unified ledger tyranny that's being pushed by these globalists through the BIS. So think about that. I mean, the world is changing rapidly. And this is why I've launched my new show, and this is why I'm working so hard to bring people up to speed on private digital money. Because you're going to have to use digital money one way or another in the years ahead. They're going to force everybody into it. But you can make a conscious choice to use decentralized, peer-to-peer, private digital money instead of the mark of the beast globalist programmable money system where you own nothing and you're happy. Not really. You own nothing and you're on psychiatric drugs, I think, is the future they're painting for you. How about if you owned all your assets and you still had custody and control, and because it's privacy crypto, the government doesn't even know you have it, doesn't know how you're spending it, doesn't know when you transfer it. How about that as a future? Yeah, it drives Janet Yellen bonkers. But that's the future of freedom for humanity. And that's the future that we advocate for here on this podcast, as well as, of course, decentralize.tv. So watch for the next episode coming out soon. And I'm going to now bring you the full interview with Dr. Kirk Moore, who is facing multiple indictments from the federal government for merely practicing compassionate medicine and giving patients what they want. Yeah, you're going to want to find out about that one. In the meantime, support us at healthrangerstore.com. We thank you for your support. And remember that we have, of course, lab-tested almost all certified organic foods, superfoods, storable foods, nutritional products, personal care, home care, and much more. The cleanest ingredients, the most environmentally friendly ingredients, by the way. Check them all out. Our body soap, our dishwasher detergent, our laundry detergent. If you don't like all the fragrance chemical crap and you want environmentally friendly ingredients that also work, check out our entire product line. You'll love it. HealthRangerStore.com, and every purchase helps support our platforms as well as this podcast. So we thank you in advance for your support. Now, here's the interview with Dr. Kirk Moore, and stay tuned for tomorrow's episode because we got a lot of great stuff coming up this week. It's going to be a powerful week of content. All right, here we go with Dr. Kirk Moore. Welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, the founder of Brighteon. And today we're joined by someone who I would consider to be a hero for children. And his name is Dr. Kirk Moore, M-O-O-R-E. And he is facing multiple indictments and criminal charges for doing things that arguably and rationally are moral, ethical, to protect children from biological weapons. So we're joined today by Dr. Moore. His website, by the way, is Stand for More, with his last name spelled M-O-O-R-E, standformore.com. And he joins us now to describe the persecution that has targeted him. Dr. Moore, welcome. It's great to have you on today. Welcome to the show.
Well, hi, Mike. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
It's great to make this connection. I've heard about your story. I don't know all the details, I admit, but from what I know so far, I think you took actions that were moral and ethical to protect children from these unproven, unsafe, and deadly vaccines. Is that an accurate view of how you see things happening, or how would you like to start this out?
Yeah, the interesting thing is I don't disagree with you. I think that I just stood by my moral code, by my oath to my patients to first do no harm. I had it described to me that I've actually been indicted for not murdering and not maiming people.
Right.
So that's probably the best line that I can describe it in a very short phrase.
Now, you're a plastic surgeon, correct?
I am.
So my first question is, why were you even administering vaccines as part of your practice?
Well,
or why were you even asked to?
Yeah, so we're going back 3 years now. The whole push at that time was to get more clinics and more spaces and more people that were able to do vaccines. And so I applied to become a vaccine clinic in, April, May of 2021.
Okay. And that was before you knew what you obviously know now about these shots.
I was a little skeptical of the whole narrative, but I did not know. I had not kind of fully engaged in the you know, what I think is going on and what I think is kind of bearing out to be true right now when and all the news and all the articles. I mean, the one that just got published yesterday where 74% of people that are dying now based on autopsies are dying from complications of the vaccine. So
Right. In the Lancet. And isn't it interesting that Lancet pulled that article in 24 hours?
Yeah.
They pulled it. I mean, you talk about the cover up.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Wasn't Dr. Peter McCullough one of the co-authors of that paper?
Yeah, he was the senior author on that.
The senior author. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he's very data driven.
Yeah. Well, he's the most published physician in our lifetime and maybe ever. And certainly and probably even the most published physician scientist on COVID in general.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. All right. So then after your practice, your clinic signed up as a vaccination site, then can you walk us through what happened and what led to the government issuing criminal charges against you?
Yeah. So, you know, like I said, started in May of 21, signed up to become a vaccine clinic, started having people coming in and asking for their vaccines. At this point, I think it was pretty much liberalized and there weren't any restrictions. You remember initially it was like anybody 85 and over, and then it was 75 and over a week later.
Right.
And everything else. By the time May comes around, you know, most schools are already out or close to being out. So people were just looking at it from the standpoint of jobs, travel was big. And then middle of the summer, we started seeing, kids needing it to go back to school. Certainly high school kids, and college age kids, you know, they weren't, you know, you couldn't go back to college if you didn't have a vaccine. So,
yeah, we call that, by the way, decentralized medical tyranny, where every institution out there demands that people take the vaccine so that the federal government itself doesn't have to be the one pushing. They just order everybody else to push the mandates.
Right. And they're probably paying them behind the scenes too, from what we're finding out, is giving them money and, and subsidizing it in some way. I mean, where do those trillions of dollars go? Right.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, continuing, I mean, and by the way, I know you have legal counsel and there are probably certain details that you can't discuss and that's totally fine. But to the extent of what you can discuss, where did the government come up with these charges? And your clinic was raided as well, wasn't it?
Yeah. So, well, they came in and confiscated in January of this year. They came in. So my vaccine clinic was live from May-ish of 21 to October, November of 22. And then in January of 23, I had 10 or 11 agents from three different agencies, FBI, DHS, and HHS, show up and confiscate my phone and my office manager's phone. There's four of us that are indicted, by the way, myself, two of my employees, a neighbor of mine, and then my business itself.
Wow.
So we're, you know, we're kind of fighting this battle. We're not allowed to talk to each other, but we're fighting it together. That's our legal system, right?
Yeah. Wow. But of course, the government agencies can collude with each other and plot all day with each other.
Right. And they can take us all down and censor us and tell Twitter not to, not to allow us to talk about it and, you know, and everything else. And then they can, you know, then they can get an injunction placed against them and then they can appeal that injunction because they don't think that they violate anybody's freedom of speech, right?
Yeah, that exactly. You're describing what just happened where the White House is arguing that they must have the power to censor Americans.
Right.
For public safety, no less. It's the only way to be safe is to censor people, apparently. So, all right. So yeah, continue. I mean, again, where are these charges coming from?
Well, so they, the indictment was, the indictment was unsealed in the middle of January. I became aware of it in the end of January. They had an agent that came in undercover, and received a vaccine card. According to the indictment, never got a shot. So that's the one, that's the one thing they have. They also claim that we took money. But at the same time, they also state that the money didn't come to us. So I don't know how they can claim that I defrauded the government of almost $100,000 when I didn't take any money. And I didn't. I didn't take any money for any of the COVID treatments that I did for all through 2020. I didn't take any money for any of the vaccines that I took. I didn't charge insurance. I didn't bill anybody. This was, you know, something that was completely done. Some people donated to a freedom, a health freedom organization here that I used to go to some of their meetings, but no affiliation. I didn't have any ownership or, you know, or anything. I just, you know, just went to their meetings and went over topics of discussion. That's all.
So what you're describing, it sounds to me like a classic case of government attempted entrapment, where they're sending people around to try to circumvent, you know, certain rules, and then claiming criminal behavior on the part of clinics. Is entrapment part of the legal defense, or I don't know if you can even talk about that.
Yeah, I'm going to stay away from the discussion of what our kind of defensive strategy is. But I've had a lot of people mention that to me. It's certainly been in the discussion in terms of, you know, how they came to hearing about us and what they did to kind of, you know, I guess bolster their case against us.
You know, it's shocking to me. I mean, we need to keep the big picture in mind here, that we live in a country where over 60,000 Americans are killed each year by fentanyl, and the government leaves the border wide open. Instead of sending agents to the border to stop the human trafficking, the weapons trafficking, and the drug trafficking, they apparently run around clinics, you know, posing as regular customers to try to, in my opinion, entrap people so they can press federal charges. Again, the problem is at the border, right? At least that is a major problem. And there are many other problems. There, you know, chemotherapy is killing people right now who are overdiagnosed, right? There's an issue. Vitamin D deficiency is rampant across Black communities in America. Doesn't it seem odd that they're singling out you when all these other much larger problems exist in the country?
Well, I think it's all part of the bigger scheme of trying to you know, just kind of distract us, right? I personally think that they're trying to get us into World War III to get us away from all the damage that this COVID vaccine has done to society.
Yes.
And humanity.
I agree with you.
And, you know, that's obviously a bigger, you know, I'll be labeled a conspiracy theorist and a conspiratorial thought leader or whatever, not leader necessarily, but just a, you know, I mean, that's a conspiracy, right? Oh, no, we would never do that. You know, Joe Biden would never get us into a war. Well, you know.
The Democrats would never rig any election either. Okay, we're right. All clear on that. But so, let me just give out your website one more time, because you need financial assistance, I understand, for your legal bills.
Yeah, it's been super expensive. You know, business for me has been down. You know, not for any other reason. I just can't concentrate on kind of continuing to grow my business. There's a lot of other, you know, obviously distractions. I'm on house arrest right now because I didn't turn in my passport and I didn't go and get my fingerprints and DNA processed by the marshal's office.
Wow.
So they consider me a flight risk, even though I've been to all of my hearings and I've contributed to all of my meetings. I have, you know, documented evidence of what my attorneys are charging me by the hour for the hours that I've, you know, that I've spent with them or talked to them. And so, you know, but I'm a flight risk. So I've got an ankle monitor on house arrest. I can go to the office and come home, and then I get 4 hours a week to go out and do my errands. So
that is unbelievable. Okay. Standwithmore.com, and more is spelled M-O-O-R-E. Here you go. And there's a make a donation button here if you want to help Dr. Moore cover his legal defense against what I consider to be an authoritarian regime. Now, let me bring in something else here. And this is my opinion, obviously not yours, but I think the real criminals in this case are those who knowingly administered vaccines after they knew that these vaccines posed an extreme risk of harm or injury or death. And thus, I think that there should be many indictments in this country of those who conspired to push these dangerous vaccines onto children and adults and everybody else and the elderly as well. I just find that it's a grave injustice what they're doing to you when so many other people out there actually contributed to something, to the uptake of something that is killing so many people. You don't have to comment on that specifically, but do you have any general thoughts in that area?
I mean, I do, and I don't know that this gets me into trouble. I mean, I just I now look at this whole scenario as the whole fraud to begin with. And so I don't know how people can be accused of, you know, I mean, I'm defrauding the fraudsters. I mean, that's where we are. I mean, that's the scenario that we're in right now. I mean, it's all a matter of, I mean, in psychiatry, they call this projection, right? That whatever it is that they're doing, they project on other people.
Yes.
And they're claiming that I've defrauded them. I mean, how do I defraud people by treating them the way they asked to be treated? Nobody was tricked. Nobody had any, you know, got any treatment that they didn't know that they didn't ask for, whether it was a vaccine or whether it was the saline shot that the government claims that we did. Nobody hid anything. It was all above board.
Plus we now know in retrospect that the vaccine does not halt transmission and does not halt infections.
Right.
So therefore, even if someone were to be injected with a saline solution, it would be no worse than the vaccine and probably much safer, no doubt much safer, because it doesn't have any of the risks of a vaccine.
Well, not only that, a third of the vaccines that were in Denmark, that study that just came out of Denmark, they're saying that up to 32 or 33% of the vaccines that they had there were actually placebos themselves. So how do they know that the ones that I injected with people weren't placebos in and of itself too?
Right. So it's okay when they do it, just not okay if someone like you were to do it.
Right.
Wow. It seems to me that this is really about compliance and obedience. Like the so-called violation that you are accused of doesn't really have anything to do with medicine or health. It has to do with obedience, I think.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, comply or be punished.
Right.
You do what I tell you to do because I tell you to do it, and don't ask questions.
Right.
Or you're going to be punished. So
that's exactly.
Yeah, And that's what goes back to it. I mean, I don't know if you've had, you know, Michael Yeadon on. He's been, you know, he's talked about this forever, where he just can't see the motivation behind any of this. But because it can't be about money. They already have all the money that they need.
Right.
I mean, it's, you know, they're laundering money through this whole system in Ukraine and the whole thing with it. You know, you mentioned it just a few minutes ago about the election and Sam Bankman-Fried, SBF, and all of that, you know, and that whole fiasco.
Right.
I mean, it was just money coming from the United States that they put in over there, and then they funneled it right back to us so that it makes it look like it's legitimate money, billions of dollars. Where'd that money go?
Yeah,
it's all about compliance. It's all about wanting power. It's all about controlling us. And that's really what it comes down to. It's not about medicine. It's not about human rights. It's not about civil rights, at least for them. For us, it is, but not for them. It's all about making sure that they have the power to tell us what to do, when to do, how to do it. And if you don't do it, then, you know, in some capacities, we're just going to kill you.
Well, and I would take it one step further. And again, these are my statements and positions, not necessarily yours. But I think this was always about depopulation and infertility. This is about reducing population numbers through a mechanism that if enough people were injected, it would cause a certain number of injuries and deaths and, of course, infertility, spontaneous abortions, and so on. And the thing is, the infertility efforts by the U.S. government go back decades. I did a story about the science advisor to President Richard Nixon, and this story actually appeared in the New York Times, I think in 1971. And the science advisor was urging Richard Nixon to spike all the food exports from the United States that are going to Africa with birth control chemicals in order to reduce the population of Nigeria and other African nations. So this is not a conspiracy theory. It was considered as presidential policy in the Nixon administration, and it was covered by the New York Times. You know, anybody who says, oh, it's a conspiracy, I'm sorry, you're just ignorant or illiterate or oblivious. This is official policy, and now it's just being ramped up. That's my view.
Well, I don't, you know, look, I think it was in the real Anthony Fauci book that, you know, that Robert F. Kennedy just wrote,
yes,
talking about the experiments that they did. I don't know, was it in East Africa, Ethiopia or Kenya or something like that, where they were, they had, they actually were, I think it was a tetanus shot that they were giving, but the,
yes,
tetanus shot had HCG. It was laced with HCG. And one of the Kenyan ministers, health ministers or somebody over there.
It was
there,
the was Kenyan actually, Catholics Bishop Association. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was just, it's nuts. So yeah, I mean, you can't argue that it hasn't happened. And how can you argue that it's, you know, maybe not happening right now? I wish I knew.
It's interesting that in medicine, you often have to make choices about morality and the Hippocratic Oath versus, in some cases, profits. There are opportunities across medicine. I'm not talking about your practice in particular, but across medicine, there are opportunities for unscrupulous doctors to earn extra money, for example, by over-diagnosing people. There was a FBI and DOJ prosecution of a cancer clinic, I think, in Detroit. Was it Fatah? Or I might have his name incorrect, but there was a doctor there who diagnosed virtually everyone with cancer who walked in his door so that he could put them on chemo. He had rows of lazy boy chairs there, people on chemo, and he was billing Medicare. Now, yes, he was prosecuted because someone blew the whistle in his own office, and what he did was heinous. It was wrong. But that's very different from what you are accused of doing. What you are accused of doing is not treating someone rather than over-treating with a toxic chemical.
Well, yeah, not necessarily even not treating them. I'm treating them the way they asked to be treated.
Okay, yeah, that's right? A more accurate. So
it goes even further than that. That's that next step, right? It's kind of like they knew what they were getting. The people in, I have not heard this story about the doctor in Detroit, but yeah, I mean, if that's what he was doing. I mean, and, you know, look, it's all about incentives. Oncologists or docs that actually treat chemotherapy, that use chemotherapy, get paid by the pharma company for using that particular chemotherapy.
That's right.
You know, so, I mean, it's another element of people stepping in and governments paying people. It's like pediatricians getting extra money for a higher percentage of vaccinated, you know, patients and vaccinated kids in their clinics.
That's right.
And I think that was circulating about Blue Cross Blue Shield in terms of what, you know, what they were paying pediatricians based upon a certain percentage of their kids that were vaccinated. It's counter incentives. I mean, that the hospitals giving, or sorry, the government, Medicare, CMS giving hospitals and clinics and doctors or whatever, these large multidisciplinary groups that are out there, giving them $32,000 for every patient that gets admitted in a hospital and dies. Extra incentives for doing it, you know. And then you hear stories and reports of stories of people being swabbed after they died to make sure they had COVID so they could get that extra 30 grand or whatever the number was.
Yeah. We've interviewed attorneys that are actually suing hospitals in California. And they say that some hospitals received up to $500,000 in incentives for falsely diagnosing someone with COVID and then essentially murdering them because a COVID death gets another payout in the hospital.
Right. Well, everything got incentivized. And so when you have those, you really have to think about, you know, kind of the unintended consequences of all this stuff. And so you might incentivize people to want to treat people because that's probably the underlying objective, was to make sure these hospitals were going to treat people appropriately. We'll give you a little extra money because, you know, maybe it's going to take a little extra staff and extra supplies and, you know, and you have to use more, you know, personal protective equipment and all of those things. You know, when that gets used, or you have to think about, okay, well, when that gets, you know, applied or gets, you know, gets used, are they really using it for the, you know, for the purposes that they're supposed to be using it for?
Right.
So, and that's the problem with any legislation in reality. So
yeah,
and
unintended consequences. Exactly. Right. May I ask you, in terms of possible outcomes of your current case, the charges against you and your staff members, are you going to be able to keep your medical license, or is that still unknown?
Well, so right now the state board hasn't come after me. But if I get convicted on a felony charge, then I will lose my license. and I can, you know, I guess reapply to get it back after a certain period of time, you know, based upon what my what my character is and whether they can justify, whether they can justify, you know, allowing me to not put the public at risk and give me my license back. Yeah, so that could happen. I mean, I'm, you know, I'm planning on going to trial. I'm planning on going for a full acquittal. And you know, I'm not admitting to having done anything wrong. We'll let the chips fall where they may.
Okay, that's great to hear, because I was going to ask you that question. So you're demanding trial, a jury trial, and you think that you can be exonerated?
Absolutely.
Well, that probably terrifies the prosecution, because they never really want to take these things to a jury.
Yeah, I mean, the majority of the, you know, there's a reason why the feds have, what, a 92-93% conviction rate, depending on who you look at. Some people say 97%, but, you know, the majority of those do not go to trial.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
So, people just kind of give up beforehand.
Well, they might also, again, I don't want to, you know, disclose your legal strategy, and I don't know anything about your legal strategy. This is the first time we're ever talking, but I would imagine that typically what feds do is they offer some kind of a deal. Could even just be dropping it to misdemeanors and fines and things like that, where they can still walk away with some kind of win and you don't end up with a felony. So that I've seen that happen in a lot of cases. In fact, I interviewed a guy who was a J6 guy, and they offered him just a misdemeanor if he admitted to taking part in all these things that were untrue. He refused to sign it. And so he didn't take the misdemeanor. And so they gave him, it was like 30 months in prison or something.
Yeah.
But that was a DC jury, which is right. Very different from
correct.
Everywhere else.
Well, you know, I'm in Utah, so we're supposedly a red state.
Right.
You know, I, on the indictment, you know, on my website that you pulled up earlier, there's some pictures on there of the day that we were, the day that we had our arraignment. We had 50 to 60 people out there that were out there kind of in support of us. There was nobody there to, you know, picket against us.
Yes.
The comments were turned off on one of the main news channels here is, you know, put out an article about us, and they had to turn the comments off because there was so much support from everybody around. And so that, you know, that gets us through the day, you know, it gets us through the day, gets us through the week, and we have our ups and downs. You know, but we're, you know, we're pretty resilient. We're pretty strong. You know, like I said, I'm not planning on, settling for anything. I didn't do anything wrong. We didn't do anything wrong. And as far as I know, the other three, defendants that are, you know, involved in this, still agree with me. I two of them are my employees, but we do not talk about the case. One of them is my neighbor, and, you know, she comes over and brings me some lettuce every once in a while, but we don't really talk about the case at all.
Yeah. Well, so, and I would imagine too, that even this interview going out, you know, we have pretty big reach in this space. Yeah. And, you know, the more public support you have, that does have an impact on the way prosecutors tend to handle these cases. And, you know, the public right now, more and more, in fact, time is on your side here. I would say, because there are more and more studies coming out showing the dangers of these vaccines. There are more and more people experiencing the deaths and injuries of loved ones who were vaccinated. You know, with each passing week, more truth comes out about this, and more people who were previously asleep on these issues are actually waking up to it. I'm seeing that too in my own circle of family and friends. So time is actually on your side. I know it sucks to not have things resolved, but the longer this goes on, the more truth comes out.
Well, there's no doubt. And had this happened a year ago, the paradigm would have been completely different, I think, too. So, you know, trial right now isn't scheduled until November. You know, so we still have, you know, 5 months ahead of us. I guess four, we're in July. Yeah, it's, you know, and like you said, the articles and the news and everything's out there. We're seeing even some of the mainstream media news starting to question some of the narrative stuff. You know, I agree with you. The more people we can get out and the more people that can support us, the more people can, you know, I mean, I just look, people need to start standing up. And they need to start standing up for their own rights and realizing that the government does not have their own best interest at heart. And a lot of people are just snowed by thinking, well, the government can't be that bad. You know, they really do think that, you know, they really are trying to do what's best. And they just get kind of caught up in this, you know, bureaucratic nightmare. It's not a bureaucracy. This is, you know, there's a lot of this stuff that's done intentionally. And, you know, they do it all the time. And they've been doing it for so many years that they just think they can get away with it. You know, been cheating in elections for 50 years, and they finally actually just outright stole one, and nothing happened. So who's to keep them from doing it again? It's just like, you know, your kid steals cookies out of a cookie jar, and you tell him, no, don't take it, and he keeps doing it, and you don't take it, and he keeps doing it. You know, I mean, what's going to stop him unless he has, you know, some repercussions or some downside or you know, or something that's going to not allow him to keep stealing the cookies.
Yeah, that's a really good point, where the arrogance of the federal government agencies in particular is more extreme than ever before. And many point out that they believe the DOJ has been weaponized, politically weaponized against Trump, for example, while protecting, of course, the Biden family, which is steeped in bribery accusations and fraud and money laundering and recently cocaine, apparently, at the White House. So apparently that's okay. You know, doctor, if you had only been snorting cocaine with Hunter Biden, you'd be fine. But instead
of sex with underage girls too, right?
Apparently that's on his laptop as well. So yes, we live in a broken system. We hope that, first of all, we appreciate you speaking out and exercising your voice here, and that will serve you well. And also, I want to point out, even the government is not accusing you of injecting someone who wanted a vaccine with saline solution, correct?
Correct.
Their accusation is that they claim that someone came to your clinic and wanted to be injected with saline solution, or am I getting too much into the weeds here?
Yeah, you know, I don't... I think that the federal agent that showed up was expecting to either get a shot of saline and a card, and was trying to prove that was and trying to show that was illegal.
I see.
That's what they're trying to do.
I see. Okay. Oh. All right. Well, who's to say that? You know, there is a placebo effect also that is very real. In fact, if you go through the scientific literature, the placebo effect is very, very strong.
Right.
It's probably 30%. One of the most effective therapeutics that exists.
Right.
For everything. Right. It works on everything, it seems. So who's to say that injecting, I'm not saying that you did this. I'm just saying theoretically as a thought experiment, who's to say that injecting someone with saline wouldn't also have that powerful placebo effect that might make that solution through their mind-body interaction more effective, since the vaccine has apparently zero effectiveness? Isn't it possible that a placebo could actually outperform the vaccine?
It absolutely is possible, yes. Yes.
Perhaps that's not a question that anyone has asked you, but... I mean, it crosses my mind. I mean, medicine is more than just the molecules. It's also mind-body interaction. I mean, you've no doubt seen this in plastic surgery. Some patients heal faster than others. Why is that?
Right.
I mean, not just age. Yeah. There are other factors.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you know, from not to plug my business necessarily, but I've been doing this a little bit differently. Maybe this is the reason why I'm kind of sitting in this quandary right now. And in this, you know, I do kind of a pain-free breast augmentation procedure where it is kind of retraining people's minds to understand that, hey, this doesn't have to be a painful procedure. You know, you can go to work and everything the next day. You can go out to dinner the same day as your surgery. You can raise your arms above your head. You can do all of these things. I've been doing that for 20 years. And I actually got reprimanded by my board because I used to give my patients ibuprofen post-operatively if needed. And because I claimed that I had a pain-free breast augmentation, that ibuprofen is a pain medicine, so therefore I can't claim to be, you know, giving people pain-free. I was reprimanded, publicly reprimanded by my society, of which I'm no longer a member. And now, I guess that was probably, that was 2009 or 10. So now that 10 years after that, and on top of that, they reprimanded me for claiming that I had a pain-free breast augmentation procedure, and I had to change it to practically pain-free just so that I could meet their criteria. And now there is an American Society of Plastic Surgeons and an American Board of Plastic Surgery member who owns the domain pain-free plastic surgery or pain-free breast augmentation, and he advertises it online. So yes, so there is a mindset, I call it. I'm not brainwashing anybody. I'm just telling you, hey, look, this is what you can expect. And we do this in finances. We do this in almost everything. You got to set a goal to achieving something, because if you don't have a goal to what it is that you're trying to do, then you're not going to ever get there. So you set a goal. You set a goal on where you want to be in life. You set a goal what you want to do for a career. You set a goal for how many kids you want to have. You set goals. So I tell my patients that you set a goal that later today after your surgery, you are going to go out to dinner. And then tomorrow you're going to drive your car to your follow-up and you're going to go to work. And I'll tell you, 97-98% of those patients achieve that goal. There's a percentage point here and there that might not make it to their follow-up by themselves. They might need some help or something, but the vast majority of them do that. So why is that available? And like you said, not available from a placebo injection that people might be getting, correct? Yeah.
Well, because, yeah, if the medical establishment recognized the power of placebo, then it would kind of expose so much of the fraud of the pharmaceutical industry, actually. I mean, here's something fascinating. I know this is perhaps a bit off topic, but, you know, when people sign up for clinical trials for psychiatric drugs, and they just take members of the public who perhaps are suffering from depression, and they have the group that gets the drug, and they have another group that gets placebo. And they tell all the patients that, you may experience side effects, right? And all kinds of crazy side effects with psychiatric drugs. Well, the patients that begin to experience side effects, they get really happy because they realize they're in the treatment group rather than the control group. And this makes their depression go away.
Right.
So,
and it turns out that how many of those were on the placebo?
Well, no. What I'm saying is that when the patients that get the real drug, they start to get the real side effects, and then they get happy realizing they're getting the drug because they want the drug. They don't want the placebo because they think the placebo is useless. So then in their minds, they make themselves happier because they're experiencing the side effects. It's like, the more I'm suffering, the more powerful this drug must be. Therefore, this is good. And then their depression scores go down.
Pounds, but I'm happier, right? That antidepressant made me gain 40 pounds, but I feel happy because that's one of the side effects of the medication.
Right. Or, erectile dysfunction. They're like, yes, it's working. Like, it's not working, but the drug is working. And therefore my depression is going to be treated. And then that results in higher efficacy scores for the drug just because it's causing side effects that people associate with treatment.
Right.
So,
yeah, no, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's crazy what you see right now with all of the stuff that's coming out there. And it's been a retraining process for me, over the last 3 years, where I seriously have to, kind of detrain my mind, and look at things from a different perspective, because I'm looking at things now as to, hey, how much of the stuff that I have been told and taught, how much of it is actually real? And that goes to money, politics,
history.
History. Oh my gosh, history is what's the term? History is told by the victors or whatever it is. And so you have to go back and actually read the actual headlines of articles in there to realize that, hey, maybe it's not quite the way people wrote the textbooks now.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, I think that much of American history has been a giant Truman Show. It's been theatrics. again and again. And we're learning even the JFK assassination was in fact carried out by the CIA, which of course a lot of us knew that this entire time, but it's all coming out now. Anyway, look, I just want to say our viewers and our audience, we appreciate you standing up and speaking out and fighting this. It's an injustice what's being done to you. And we agree that you deserve our support. So I want to give out your website, standformore.com. And again, that's Dr. Kirk Moore. So you can spell more with M-O-O-R-E, standformore.com. And there's a donate button if you wish to make a donation. And also you can share the story and you can share this video. We'll also do an article about this video. And we encourage everybody to share that article. I've been unbanned on Twitter recently, by the way, after 4 years of being silenced. So I'll tweet about this as well. Anything else you want to add, Dr. Moore, before we wrap up today's interview?
No, I didn't do this to get myself into trouble, do whatever it is that I was supposed to have done. I took care of my patients based upon my own moral and ethical bounds, according to their own moral and ethical bounds and their boundaries and their desires. I abided by my oath and I abided by my ethics. I'm just one guy. And we need to stand up. We need to push back. We need to realize that nobody has our best interests at heart. Except ourselves. So we have to, I'm not trying to say people need to be selfish. I just think that we need to start realizing that, you know, only you can do what's best for you.
You can't surrender your body to a government mandate or government dictates on medicine of any kind. Right. You need to have discernment for yourself.
Right. Right. And you need to educate yourself and you need to realize that this, you know, that you are going to have, you know, you're the only one that's going to look out for you and you're the only one that's going to do what's best for you. And the government is not looking out for you.
No, I would add they're trying to exterminate you actually. But that's, I've interviewed a lot of guests and I've reached that conclusion after a number of years. And it's clear in my mind, there is an extermination agenda, but I think they will fail. I don't want to go into too much detail, but it's not going to work the way they planned. They'll kill some people. They've already killed some, but they're not going to kill as many as they hope. You know, like 7 billion. No, it's not going to happen.
The TED talk that Bill Gates had, right? 500,000? No, he said we could decrease population with vaccines by 15%.
15%, yeah, through vaccination policies, yeah.
So vaccines were supposed to be safe and effective. How is that safe and effective?
Right, exactly. No, and he also pushes, of course, infertility and abortions through so-called women's health. So, you know, reproductive health. It means aborting babies. So, you know, a lot of twisted stuff going on out there. But Dr. Moore, we appreciate you taking a stand and speaking your voice here. And I want to thank you for joining me today. This has been a very enlightening discussion. And I invite you back. We want to keep in touch about the progress of your case. Yeah. And you can reach out to us anytime when you have news to share. We'll get you back on the show.
Okay. Well, hey, Mike, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet.
And I've really enjoyed it. Thanks.
Absolutely. Thank you. Have a great day.
Okay. You too.
Okay. All right. So there you have it, folks. Dr. Kirk Moore. And what an incredible story, not yet completed. The final chapters haven't been written of this legal challenge, but with your support, voicing this out, sharing this video and sharing the stories about this, then we can help bring some public support and awareness to this, what I would characterize as an illegitimate persecution of a man who cares for his patients, probably more than most physicians. So thank you for watching today. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com, the free speech platform. And feel free to repost this interview on other platforms as well. Thanks for watching, everybody. Take care. Today's interview is brought to you by the immune-supporting supplements that we have at healthrangerstore.com. And I brought a little selection of them here for my desk today to kind of show you. And we have liposomal zinc, also this elderberry echinacea tincture that was formulated, and the extraction is done by Dr. Ed Group with Global Healing Center. And then we do the testing. So it combines all our heavy metals testing, glyphosate testing, and other tests with Ed Group's extraction technology to make what I think is the most potent and the cleanest, the most effective elderberry echinacea extract in the world. It's right there. That's on our website, healthrangerstore.com. Also, we have the Seven Treasures there, which is a combination of the mushrooms that, you know, the biofunctional mushrooms that you all know about, you've heard about. You can look up the ingredients on our website. And then we have non-GMO vitamin C there on the side. That's critical because we get our vitamin C from Europe. It's not from China. And it's non-GMO in terms of its sourcing. And then we do our lab tests on top of that. So it is the cleanest vitamin C, not the cheapest, but the cleanest that you can find in the world. And if you go to our website, healthrangerstore.com, you'll see that we have a lot of other immune-supporting supplements, different forms of vitamin C here is what I'm showing you, and then discounts also for bulk purchases or quantity purchases of vitamin C, lots of different forms. We also have buffered vitamin C powder right here, which is the sodium ascorbate, so it's not as acidic as just straight-up vitamin C itself. So check all these out. If you want immune support, then nutrition is a great option to consider. You can check it out at healthrangerstore.com. We appreciate your support, and please know that every purchase helps support this platform so that we can keep bringing you uncensored interviews with amazing guests on our free speech platform, Brighteon.com. Thank you for your support. Take care.